Welcome to the 6th edition of the Classic of the Month. Tonight, Supper's Ready, Part 2. We now reach Willow Farm. The absence of a promenade between How Dare I Be So Beautiful and Willow Farm is intentional. As Armando Gallo describes in his book, and quoting Tony Banks, "After this really romantic bit which became How Dare I Be So Beautiful, why don't we do something really stupid and go straight into Willow Farm? Just bang, stop the song and instantly go into it." This was a little song that Peter had, lyrics and everything. And once we all got used to the idea and slotted Willow Farm in, it gave us great momentum to write the rest of the thing. The obvious consequence of this approach is that any attempt to find a congruent continuity with the flow of the story is, to put it lightly, a bit dubious. I believe that the lyrics of Willow Farm portray the senseless and superficial existence of a middle class manipulated by the factual powers. Mass manipulation. Of course, much in line with the article The Call to the Ephemeral and Its Effect on Art. All you need is to change Willow Farm for current society, and the lyrics speak by themselves. The structure of Willow Farm is a large ternary form, A, B, A, where A, in turn, has the structure A, A prime, B, B. B has a binary form, C, D, and A prime is a reprise of theme A. Sections A are in a meter of 12 by 8. Notice that the sharp contrast between parts A and B is achieved by several means. The music suddenly stops and a scream, "All change," is heard with doors banging in the background. The rhythm changes from 12 by 8 to a straight 4 by 4. The mode changes from minor to major, and also the organ is replaced by a piano. The changing character between parts A and B is remarkable and is a good example of Genesis' ability to move effortlessly through different styles. According to Gallo, Banks suggests including a cadence at the end of How Dare I Be So Beautiful, and it is very effective because it defines the mood of this section. Instead of the normal cadence using the ordinary Western minor mode, he uses, which is a mode called Phrygian. The second tone is lowered a half step. This cadence is also used to introduce the fourth and last promenade, but this time it is cleverly used to modulate to G minor. Let's identify each section while we listen to this plateau. If you go down to Willow Farm to look for butterflies, butterflies, butterflies. Surprise, everyone lies like the fox on the rocks. And the musical box. Oh, there's mom and dad, and good and bad, and everyone's happy to be here. A prime. Winston Churchill dressed in drag. He used to be a British flag. Plastic bag, what a rag! Everything, we're growing everything. We've got some men, we've got some out, we've got some wild things floating about. Everyone,
again,
we're changing everyone. We'll name them all, we've had them here. And the real stars are still to appear.
See,
feel your body melt.
Mom to mud to mad
to dad, dad in the office, dad in the office. You're all full of all dad to dam to dam
to mom, mom diddly washing, mom diddly washing.
You're all full of all. Let me hear the lies. We're living this up to the eyes.
Ooh,
A double prime.
To my voice, to look for hidden doors, tidy floors, more applause. You've been here all the time, like it or not, like what you got, you're under the soil. And then with a bang, all of us get in our places.
Peter Gabriel's description within the context of the Supper's Ready story is: climbing out of the pool, they are once again in a different existence. They're right in the middle of a myriad of bright colors, filled with all manners of objects, plants, animals, and humans. Life flows freely and everything is mindlessly busy. At random, a whistle blows and every single thing is instantly changed into another. We reach Promenade 4. This is the longest promenade and a very appropriate one because it provides a pause before the long and complex apocalypse in 9x8. The structure is a theme and variation with an introduction. So it's intro, A prime, A double prime, A triple prime. Intro. In contrast to the theme and its variations, which are mainly acoustic, the intro is based on electronic soundscapes drawn by mellotron, electric guitar, and bass. A sequence of modulations takes us from G minor to A minor. In the last chord, the mellotron is purposely out of tune, helping to create a stronger contrast between the electric and acoustic parts of the piece. Theme and variations. The theme is presented by the flute with an acoustic guitar accompaniment. Each variation introduces additional instruments: A prime, an organ; A double prime, a Spanish guitar; A triple prime, an electric guitar. Notice that in A triple prime, the electric guitar recalls the melody of the first verse of the Guaranteed Eternal Sanctuary Man. I know a farmer who looks after the farm, and uses it to modulate to F sharp minor, the tonality of Apocalypse in 9x8. Intro. A. A prime. A double prime. A triple prime. We reach the longest tableau, Apocalypse in 9x8. It is very likely that the lyrics of this tableau emerged from the final verses of Willow Farm, from the phrase "all change" onwards. You will recall that they say, "You're under the soil." Yes, deep in the soil. So we'll end up with a whistle and end with a bang, and all of us fit in our places. As Banks pointed out, Willow Farm was a separate piece, including lyrics, written earlier by Gabriel. See how Gabriel ties Willow Farm to Apocalypse in 9x8. Gabriel's description of this tableau is, "At one whistle, the lovers become seeds in the soil, where they recognize all the seeds to be people from the world in which they had originated. While they wait for spring, they are returned to their old world to see the apocalypse of St. John in full progress. The seven trumpeters cause a sensation, the fox keeps throwing sixes, and Pythagoras, a Greek extra, is deliriously happy as he manages to put exactly the right amount of milk and honey on his cornflakes." For those of you with music knowledge, you might want to read Mark Spicer's analysis of this plateau on his paper Large-Scale Strategy and Compositional Design in the Early Music of Genesis. He makes a very interesting comparison between Apocalypse in 9x8 and Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. As its name implies, the meter of this section is in 9x8, but not in three groups of three, but rather follow the pattern 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 3. If you don't have a clear understanding of what a measure is, you might want to follow the explanation given on the analysis of Close to the Edge Part 1, starting at minute 24. The structure of this plateau is a long instrumental section, organ solo 1, interlude and organ solo 2, then section B, an interlude, and section C. Many fans struggle trying to count this section. If you want to try to count this, try not to listen to Gabriel's melody and count like this. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, where the long 1, 2, 3 each occupy one of the three groups of two beats. Let's do it together until the beginning of the organ solo. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Now let's see section A from the point of view of Peter Gabriel. He is not counting in 9x8. He sings each verse in straight 4x4, makes a pause of 2 beats, that is 2x4, and repeats this 5 times. It takes him 18 beats to complete each cycle, which is equivalent to 2 9x8 measures. That is why the cymbal coincides with the beginning of each voice cycle. The last time, he needs to go into the 2 beats pause to complete the verse and even overlaps with the first beat of the instrumental section. Let's count them together. Try not to pay attention to the instrumental accompaniment. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. The organ solo is unquestionably one of the most remarkable solos in the history of progressive rock. The way climax is built is by creating harmonic stress over a harmonic pedal. Please refer to the analysis of Starless for a definition of harmonic pedals. Now in this case, the harmonic pedal is not based on a single note, but on a simple ostinato pattern based on three notes. What you just counted, 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 3, is that pattern that repeats itself throughout the entire solo. There are two organ solos, separated by an interlude with a complex interplay between organ chords and flute. If you thought counting the voice was hard, wait until you see what Banks does in the organ solos. I had a hard time myself figuring out how he is counting. There's no fixed pattern, or at least I wasn't able to find one, and surely there may be different ways to break down the measures. However, and just for the purpose of having some fun together, here's how I count the measures. I cannot count this without running out of air, so I will use two woodblocks instead. I will do this until a few bars after the solo settles on 4x4. Each time the sound of the woodblock changes indicates a change of measure. During the interlude, the bass and guitar stop playing the ostinato pattern. A single bass note is kept during the whole passage. A very complex interplay is done between the organ, playing chords at 4x4, and the flute with a free form of the ostinato pattern at 9x8. To add complexity, the drum plays a pattern that is a hybrid between 4x4 and 9x8. The only thing that you can hang on to is a cymbal that is always played in the last beat of the 9x8. This is certainly one of the most complicated passages in the history of the band. The second organ solo, until a couple of bars before the end, is based on 4x4. This is easier to follow because the left hand in the organ is keeping the beat while the right hand plays a syncopated pattern. Both hands start ascending, building a fabulous climax for the entry of 666. Let's take a closer look at the remaining sections, B, Interlude, and C. Section B starts with 666. I label this section B instead of A' prime because although the rhythmic pattern and voice style are the same, the melodies are different. Notice something very relevant. For the first time, the organ starts to play at 9x8 in sync with the rhythm section, changing chords every two 9x8 measures. Section B ends with the phrase, "a brand new tune," and we enter an interlude where the organ now plays in straight 9x8 along with the rhythmic section. At the final part of the interlude, the ostinato pattern in 9x8 stops, and the metric is set at 4x4 in preparation for C, which is really a reprise of Lover's Leap. If you recall my explanation on Close to the Edge Part 1, it would seem that this is another example of using polyrhythmic metric displacement to build tension to represent the battle, and resolving the tension by playing all at the same meter to portray the end of a conflict. In Close to the Edge, it was a struggle between the spirit and flesh, in this case, a struggle between good and evil. Section C of this long plateau takes us back to Lover's Leap, with a pompous arrangement that includes tubular bells, and on Now I'm Back Again, a clever modulation takes us to the final plateau based on the themes of the guaranteed eternal Century Man. Let's listen to the final part of Apocalypse in 9x8 and try to focus on how the music progressively goes in sync until, in the interlude, the whole band plays at 9x8 before changing to 4x4. We reach the final plateau, as sure as X is X. This plateau is a reprise of the guaranteed eternal Century Man and presents an astonishing overlapping of opposing concepts and forces. On GESM, the music and the lyrics refer to the evil impostor who manipulates the masses in the name of religion. Now, the same music, rearranged, has lyrics that represent the return of Jesus Christ himself to lead his children's home. Quoting Mark Spicer, in live performances, Peter Gabriel would typically sing this final section of Supper's Ready suspended like an angel above the stage, expressing visually the idea that the ordeal is over and that good has ultimately prevailed over evil. It is no accident that Gabriel's lyrics for As Sure As X Is X, Aching Men's Feet, contain the most explicit intertextual reference of the entire piece, a recasting on William Blake's famous poem about building a new Jerusalem on English soil, as immortalized in C. Hubert Parry's rousing World War I hymn, Jerusalem, from 1916. One can hardly imagine a more fitting conclusion for this decisively British retelling of the story of the apocalypse.